Accession number 29953, Reel 3.
The actual move, as I mentioned, to be sent to Henley under a cloud, etc., etc. But fortunately, Dennis, Lieutenant Colonel Dennis, was really quite good, and he stopped, Captain Key getting me to his lot. And that's why I took a chance after a bit of pointing out to him that others of my equivalent had all been commissioned, that sort of thing. So he said he'd go ahead, and he did arrange for the short break and get it from there. And I was commissioned then, and that way, much, I'm sure, to the annoyance of the adjutant, who was a regular army person. But some of these things, looking at them in a sense, although it was very serious, it was quite funny, because it took me a long time to get permission to have our signal office at Henley staffed 24 hours a day, because we were getting asked to do different skeds, or listening to this, listening to the next thing. And the adjutant insisted that no more than one senior NCO and two other ranks would be allowed this. So that's what we had to work with. The arrangement being that if anything happened and we were to be having to do something drastic in the middle of the night or any time, the senior NCO who was there was get onto it and send one of the other ranks to waken me up, and the other rank would waken some of the other wireless operators up, so we could always just go straight there. But this went on. Everything was going quite nicely. The actual signal office at Henley was well away from the main buildings, so we arranged for the night shift to take all their food and water, and got an electric kettle for them and everything else. And after a bit, one morning, I had arranged with them that when it came to 5 o'clock in the morning, they would stop all instructing and training and clean up the whole place, so that this new lot coming in would immediately not have to do anything like that. And the adjutant, for some reason or other, decided to make an unannounced visit an hour before this clean-up took place. They said he went a kind of berserk and gave the two other ranks a real telling off. I don't know what he said to the senior NCO. He refused to tell me anything about it. He said, "I'm not speaking about it to you." He said, "It's my fault in a way, but it's not speaking about it to you." I knew the signal office was always kept spotless, but of course the adjoining room where they had their supper and that sort of thing would be dirty cups about this. So he insisted that there would be no food taken in the signal office building at all from then on, which is fine. Okay, I said, well, that's easy enough. We'll have to double the staff, because I've got to have at least one NCO there with two other ranks all the time. So you've got to have one senior, one junior NCO, and four other ranks there. I immediately started to think about how we would do this. And I was walking back to the signal office after an early lunch when the Fanny Ensign at Henley called me. I was a bit away from her, and she yelled it to me. So I stopped, and she came running to me and that sort of thing. I said, she said, I want to speak to you. I've got to speak to you. I said, fine, your office or mine. I don't care, not any of that. I'll talk to you here, right now. I said, what's wrong? She said, your staff have got the right to use the small room in the just off the kitchen. There's a range there that's kept burning 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with a great big kettle with hot water next to it. And that's one of the things. I said, yes, that's where we're having our supper. You can't have it between 10 p.m. and midnight. I said, well, okay, it won't worry me, it's all right. We'll do that. That sort of thing. I said, just the matter is, why can't we have it? She said, well, the Fenny Ensigns have to dispose of the soiled sanitary towel by burning them in the rains, because it's all these new drainage systems, it would all get bunged up with them. It's been bunged up already, sort of stuff. I said, that's all right, no trouble with that, that's fine. All you've got to do is to see the adjutant and see what can be done. Me? I'm not going near the adjutant. We don't speak. I said, well, I don't speak either to him. No. She said, in any case, he wouldn't know what a sanitary towel was. If he thought we were burning towels, he'd have a fit. So, the whole thing got hilarious. I said, well, right, the CEO is a married man. Go and see him. He must have some vague memories of this. May not recently. No, I wouldn't go there. I've only been there twice. He doesn't even have the courtesy to get up from his chair when I go into the room. A gentleman always stands up when a lady goes into the room, and he doesn't. He's a boor. He's rude. I'm not going near him at all. I said, oh, this is getting good. I said, tell you what about Chiz, the chief instructor? He can maneuver everything. Oh, no, she said, no. Oh, please, no. I don't let me speak to him. I said, why not? He's a married man, for goodness sake. He goes to home once a month and that sort of thing at suitable times. She said, I know all that. But she said, he's the only real friend. I mean, apart from you sort of thing, he's the only real friend I have here. So we always meet for that half hour drinkies before supper and have great chats about everything, about painting, about the weather, about everything under the sun. But we never mention anything intimate. If I mentioned anything intimate like that to him, she said, be terrible. He would blush, and he would never speak to me again. So, my goodness, this is really getting funny. I said, okay, I'll go and see him and tell him about this. So I went and went in the door after knocking. You didn't go in unless you heard somebody saying, come in, because he might have been sleeping or something. And I went in. He was sitting there in his usual position, the desk covered in papers and everything like that. It looked very good. He said, can't it wait? I'm busy. I don't want to see you. I said, well, I can't wait. You've got to see me. And I told him what had happened with this. But it only took about 2 or 3 minutes. By the end of it, he was sitting in his chair. His mouth was wide open, his eyes popping out. And then he suddenly drew himself together and he started to laugh. But this time his face was a real gorgeous pink, so shut up, went, looked out the window with his back to me, and said, had another giggle, then, yes, right. Oh, I see, yes, we'll have to do, yeah, right. I tell you what, leave it with me, and I'll see what I can do with the adjutant. I said, fine, that's great. I went to go out the door, opened the door to go out, and I thought he might have turned around, but I'd like to have seen his face. All I could see was the back of his neck, and his ears were bright scarlet. The whole thing was a real laugh. But he didn't turn around, so I said, by the way, the Fanny Einstein says, if they get the use of that room between 10 p.m. and 11 p.m., they could manage. Oh, thank you. So that was duly arranged. Which was fine. Didn't mind it. Nobody minded it at all. But I said, they'll have the notice changed that room will not be available until after 11 p.m. Oh, no. I mean, the paper will get dirty quickly. We'll just change it when it just gets dirty. This was the adjutant being covered, which was all the rest of it. So I was to be responsible for seeing that none of my staff went near that room until such and such a time. So that was all right. 3 days afterwards, I was in the mess anteroom for drinkies before supper at night, and the CEO was there, and the adjutant was standing on his own, the usual place. He had his own special brew of drink, which was a glass of milk, because he had ulcers, supposedly. And the CEO came in along past me and went straight over to the adjutant, and in a voice which he doesn't usually do, but he wanted everybody to hear it, oh, hello, old boy. I haven't had a chance to speak to you for an awful long time. I tell you what, come and have a drink with me. And he steered the adjutant over at the bar and ordered 2 pints of beer. The adjutant had no option but to drink that beer. We were all sort of killing ourselves laughing. As soon as the meal was finished, the adjutant was out that door and disappeared. Later that night, when I was going to go along to our toilets, There's two fannies that they all use the passageway to go along. One was saying to the other, "Did you hear that wonderful sound there tonight, earlier on?" And she said, "What sound?" "Oh, the adjutant was being violently sick in his bathroom." She said, "It was wonderful." You know, it's that sort of thing. Everybody was in a real laugh about it. But the adjutant never showed face for about a month after that. Whether he was still suffering from his... He was out there at every dinner at night. He had to be, and that was it. Regular army. And then when he did started making a move, I was in the signal office and the phone rang. And the voice at the other end said, "Adjutant speaking." No, CO speaking. I said, "Yes." No, sorry, getting mixed up. "Adjutant speaking." I said, "Yes. I will be inspecting the signal office tomorrow at 10 a.m., which gives me 24-hour notice, you see, which is a regular army thing. They always did that. Told everybody an hour, the day before, what they were going to do, and that saved any problems. And sure enough, 10 a.m. the next day, he came in, all dressed up, sticking that he's on, hat on, boots and everything else, obviously ready to tear me apart. But fortunately, as a sked had just started up with an agent, so he said, "Good morning." I said, "Good morning" back. I didn't wear a hat, so I wouldn't have to salute, which is that really annoyed him. And so I told him that we were working on covering this live sked, that he could look anywhere in the building it suited him, but he must not go near the wireless operators on the sets, because it could mean the death of an agent abroad. So he stood and looked, and the loudspeaker for the base station started pumping out everything. He didn't know what to do, obviously. So he finally set off almost on tiptoe, well away from the operators, to the far end of the room. Stood, had a look round. There was a table which was had been used for sets, but we'd had to give them away. So he went up to it. He looked sideways along it and drew his finger along the top to see if there was any dust. He tiptoed back and whispered, "Thank you." It's the last time I ever spoke to him. The whole thing was so utterly farcical, you know. Just, you could just quite see a lot of the stuff with the regular army background. Get 24 hours notice and everything's fine. So it goes. But
yes, anyway, we're talking on that, actually. I'm talking on that point about, before we started taping, about class.
Yeah.
And you were telling me about the use of the choice of fannies as opposed to ATS and REMS. Could you just talk about it one more time, just on the benefit of the tape?
Yeah, it's one of those things that the two fannies who came first had been post office operators, but they only had it working with a sounder, and they got training from us, and that set alarm bells ringing with the agents. It didn't bother us, we didn't think about it. And when it was talked about in general, I pointed out that there were plenty ATS and WAFs and WRENs who were fully trained wireless operators by them. All we had to do was to teach them our system. It'd be no bother at all, but that was not touched. It had to be fannies. And of course they were a pick of people and all the rest of it. I found them all very nice, but you didn't push your luck. I mean, this other chap, Mac, who was in signal office with me in headquarters at the end, he was the same. We never went out with a fanny. Others, the instructors, did if they wanted to, and that sort of thing, go down for a drink with them, but neither Mac nor I would go. I made the exception of the fanny who was the CEO's secretary, which was very useful. I would take her out for a drink, too, for a meal and that sort of thing, just to keep friendly with her. But she wanted to get too friendly then, so I said it wasn't on with me. I was otherwise engaged in that way. So she branched off, and she actually married one of the Norwegian agents and went out to not live in Norway. I think it's Rulstead was the name. Yeah. I didn't know anything about this. I mean, I knew she was going to London every weekend and she was seeing somebody. It didn't bother me. I'd said, I mean, we can go out for a drink or a coffee or anything you like any time. I mean, I'm very friendly with you, but I don't want it to be anything other than that. And she appreciated that. It was after the war a bit, I got this postcard of what would be the equivalent of a Norwegian Christmas thing, a whole lot of wee little elves and small Christmas things and everything back. And just a brief note to say, married so-and-so Rulstead. Hope you're all well. No address, nothing. No way of getting in touch. So I don't know whether she's still alive or not, but she did. I mean, I could see, Rulstead himself joined the Special Forces Club, and you got the odd snippet that he was still about, but what the position is now, I don't know. I don't know whether Mary Champion, as she was. She was a lovely girl. I must say that. She did a very good job in, as Secretary of the CO, and certainly did a very good job for me in that position.
So how did you move from Fawley Court? How did you end up in London?
Well, we were covering the skeds that the Americans were working, plus anything else that was going on. And I was on duty, and a person phoned up. The phone rang, and I answered it. And a voice I'd never heard before said, headquarters here. Well, you cover such and such a scared such at a time, and gave details to me. I said, yes. And they finished up by saying, it's very important. And nobody had ever said that to me before. They knew I would be on top of it. So that was a scared that we couldn't get through by telephone to the American station. And the American station, the agents didn't send their message blind. They just kept trying to get through until somebody could kill them. That was it. So it was after that I phoned. I waited for a quarter of an hour to calm down myself, and then I phoned to ask for the headquarters signal office person, and it was about a quarter of an hour later before he phoned back. I still didn't recognise the voice, and I was really angry with the whole thing with him and everything else. And he got a belly full, and at the end of it he just said, right, thanks, and hung up. He'd be busy on lots of other things at the time, I can quite accept that. And then it was after that, it was the next morning about 9:30, 10:00, this voice on the phone simply said, commanding officer speaking, you must pack all your baggage and everything. There'll be a car waiting for you outside the building. You have to report to headquarters signal office as quickly as possible. It didn't take me long to pack and arrange for mail being forwarded and laundry and that sort of thing. I went outside. As soon as the fanny driver saw me, she started the car up, and I just got in beside her and we drove to London. There was not much traffic, but she was a very good driver. Stopped outside the signal office. I got my stuff out. She drove off. I went in, went down to the signal office itself was in the basement. Went down the basement, and there was Mac. It was him. I didn't recognise his voice because I'd never spoken to him on the phone before, and he was just there. Oh, he said, "Great, good to see you." I said, "It was you that phoned." Yeah, he said, "It's me." And he told me what had all been happening, how the American station were having problems and he wanted somebody else there. And then after we discussed that, that was when the Fanny Ensign, who was the third person to make up the 24 hours, 8 hours of time, said that she couldn't cope. I mean, she didn't know enough about signals working or anything, and she wasn't in a position to tell an American officer, major colonel, whatever it was, what to do. So she didn't want to be a part of it. So we said, that's all right, we'll cover you. We'll be, one of us will be here every time there's any, even the slightest chance of this coming up. We'll be here for taking over. So she said, well, that's fine. In that case, I'll take over the responsibility for saying to all the girls what they need or time off and all that sort of thing. You don't have to worry about that. I'll do this side of it. And we worked that way for the rest of the time. That there was always one of us there to go out and get it, that side of it. But a lot of these things, the thing that came up, maybe as well mentioned it just now, was a book came out a year or 2 years ago, and there was a picture on the front that I recognised right away. There was this WAF officer one time when I was on my own in the signal office. This WAF officer came and stood outside the door of the signal office. Well, there were other rooms about, so I didn't bother about it. But she still kept standing there, just looking in now and again. And so I went out and asked if I could help her. Well, she said, yes, thanks very much. Can you tell me if you've had anything, and she mentioned the name of an agent, anything in the past few days. I said, well, I'll go and check. And I went and checked and came back and told her, no, we didn't have nothing, just thanked me very politely and went away. This happened several times, three or four times. And I thought nothing much about it, but it's the fact she was in WAF uniform, because everybody was in khaki in the headquarters. And it was years after that, I'll show you the actual, oh no, doesn't matter. I noticed this book in the bookshop, and that was a picture of her in WAF uniform.
Oh, Peter Atkins.
Yes. It's so amazing. So I met her once in London at a meeting, that sort of thing, but that was her. And she wasn't British, of course.
No.
But she was very nice. She'd just come in, ask the questions and go away. And if she had been in khaki or even civilians, I probably wouldn't have thought twice about her, but it just struck me as funny. I never knew she was going to escort people into the aircraft before they actually took off. But just seeing it on the in the bookstore, just glancing down, there's the picture of her. All these years afterwards, you couldn't mistake it. It's quite amazing. But she was very polite, very nice. I never knew she wasn't British to start with, nothing at all about her. But it's amazing how these things you find that, you know, you. I hadn't been to a general meeting of the Special Forces Club since it started, until this was a special meeting, because all the time I'd worked in London for 2 years just before I retired, and the meetings didn't suit me from timing, but this one did. So I went there, and there was the coach, Bod, Vera Atkins, two or three like myself there. So it was a very pleasant evening, just meeting them all again. And of course, they're all dead now.
Are there any other individuals who stand out from your time in London, I suppose?
No, Leo Marx was, we were in touch with him and that sort of thing. There was no, we didn't have time. I mean, there was that one, not Giuliani, the other one, whom I saw in the pub, but I never knew anybody else. We're just in the office all day until you go out and get a drink in the pub and a sandwich and back into the office, and then go back out for a meal at night, and then if you're on night duty, you'd set off at 1 a.m. to walk home, have a few hours sleep, and come back in, see everything was all right in the signal office, go and have lunch, and you're there again until the end, sort of thing. It's just one of these arrangements. So there's only one incident which really annoyed me at myself, actually. I'd been on duty all night, come off, had lunch and everything, and then the routine was that I would be on from 4 to midnight, but everything was going fine. Mac was there, cheerful and everything, and then suddenly I saw him and he was really down in the mouth. I said, what's happened now? Oh, he said, I had a private meeting, I was arranged to go and meet somebody tonight. You'll not be here because you're finishing at 4 o'clock. But he said, or something about that time. No, I was on until midnight, but it was, he said, I've got this meeting and it'll last well beyond midnight, and so I'll not be able to keep it because you'll not be here to cover. I said, look, Mac, I'll work right through. Give me an hour off, I'll go and get something and come back. And I did that. And he went off, and I wouldn't see him till the next day, which was fine. I wasn't needing to fall asleep or anything like that. I wasn't at all sleepy. And I got a phone call, a special sked that night, 2 a.m. Everything should be organized for that. These things happen if there's maybe a special drop to some party somewhere or other, and we were all on standby. So, I mean, everything was working. I didn't normally have to mention that to the staff who were there, because they're all really excellent, very good. But that night, for some reason or other, everybody started being awkward. The teleprinter text stuff coming through was all smudged. There were messages lying on the floor. I checked everybody, told them about it. Everybody was, yes, we'll do it. Everything was very nice, but you couldn't get through. There was something going on, and I couldn't fathom it. And I knew we were getting within half an hour off the deadline for this special operation, which I really wanted to be on top with everybody, when one of the teleprinter girls came out and made to go to the toilets or something like that. So I walked in front of her and stopped her from going out. She looked at me, I said, what's going on tonight? Everything's all right. I said, everything isn't all right. You darn find it isn't. No, everything's perfect. There's nothing wrong at all. We're all working normally. I said, you're not. What is happening? And she kind of looked down her feet. She said, well, it's all your fault. I said, why my fault? She said, you weren't supposed to be on duty tonight. It was supposed to be the Fanny Ensign. I said, so what? I'm on duty, you're not her. What's the difference? There's a big difference. It's very hot down here at night. It's very hot there still in the teleprinter room. So the Fanny Ensign, when she's due on duty, as she should be tonight, allows us to take our skirts off and walk about with our overall on. You take a whole lot of your clothes off, as far as I'm concerned. I couldn't care less. There's a special sked on in about 10 minutes' time, possibly. She just turned round and stamped back into the office and slammed the door. And there was a scatter. Everything was sorted out in no time. Of course, the phone rang and the sked was cancelled. So that was it. But it was this business. I never got a chance of apologising to her for being so rude. I mean, I really was nasty and rude to her, because I saw her once after that, and she just walked straight past me, wouldn't even speak to me, sort of thing. But at that time I was being booked to go out to Australia, so I never, hardly ever saw her again after that. But it was just that episode. I was really rude, and I admit that, but I just had enough. This business of just going around, but you had to wear your skirt on because we were there. Oh, it's just one of those situations. They did all wear the stuff all the time, but obviously that Fanny Ensign allowed them to take the skirt off. But I had said she didn't have to come in because I was going to be in, and I was going to try and walk home at 3 or 4 a.m. for no time at all. But yeah, it's one of these things.
It's just a small point, but yeah. You mentioned earlier on going to the pub and perhaps going to have something to eat.
Yeah.
It's difficult sometimes to get a picture of what Baker Street was like inside.